720 WGN. It is On the Road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And you heard the roundup right before we went to the news with Scott. We're going to get pretty much right into this show. As always, you can enter to be the bona fide ride of the show. Just give us your first car, your favorite car, your dream car, 312-981-7200. You can text it in, you can call in, you can talk to Camille, send a picture if you want to. It's always fun to see that. And so on the show, as soon as we come back from this very quick break, we are going to get back with Stan Kawaczynski, amazing historian and media member for the motorsports world. So stay tuned for that. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is racing historian Stan Kawaczynski on the road with Dane, WGN Radio.
Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and honored to have, as we touch on not only the future of racing, all the exciting things happening in all the different series, but also the great history and legacy of racing that Chicagoland, and Illinois has here in motorsports. And there's been a guy that's had his hand on the pulse of so much of it. I don't think anybody knows more about all the things that are going on than our guest. He has been a writer, a journalist, a photographer, and an announcer at many of the different speedways. You know him for a dozen years at Northwest Indiana Times, of course, National Speed Sport Magazine. It is the one and only Stan Kawaczynski. Stan, welcome to WGN.
Thanks, Dane. Thanks for having me today.
Now, this is a thing where, and I think racing fans, and we talk about it all the time, is once you get an opportunity to be there in person, you're hooked typically for life. When that happens is up to you, whether you've got a family connection or maybe just it's kind of built, maybe hardwired into you. But when it comes for the love of racing at all sizes, and this isn't necessarily just those major series that you see on TV, but racing in general, and here in Illinois, Stan, you have had it since the get-go.
Yeah, pretty much probably 4 or 5 years old, and my parents took me to a little track called 87th Street Speedway on 87th Street in Chicago on the southeast side, and I was hooked. I mean, they weren't race fans. They just took me as to entertain, I guess, their little boy, and I was hooked. And a fella down the street had a race car in the alley in Chicago where we lived, and it was just one thing after another. And like I said, my dad wasn't a big race fan, but I would beg him to take me to the stock car races.
Wow. It isn't necessarily something that you always hear, at least not necessarily something that gets a lot of attention here in Illinois. But there was a time when there was so much more racing than people nowadays would probably understand, know, or be able to appreciate. One of those first races was it on 87th Avenue? I mean, it was in the city of Chicago in a place where there was probably a lot more racing going on than there is now.
Yeah, that track closed up after the 1956 season, but I was doing some research here recently, and probably around 1960, there was probably a dozen tracks, venues, that were having weekly racing or special events, both asphalt oval tracks, dirt tracks, and sports car racing, road course racing up there in Carpentersville at the Meadowdale Speedway. So a lot of action going on in 1960, probably, like I said, a dozen tracks or so.
And maybe around that time, and even a little bit further, we all think of Soldier Field. You know, it is one of the iconic structures. And I think in sports, of course, they've adjusted it quite a bit, and it's way less iconic now, but the history is there and so identified with the Chicago Bears as it should be. But what a lot of people don't know, it was a big racing venue back in the day.
Yeah, I've got the title of a little presentation. Yes, dear, they did race stock cars at Soldier Field, and starting in 1949, that was the first stock car race there at Soldier Field, and they raced there pretty much every year through 1968. For I think 1 year they didn't race was I think 1959. They tore up the track, the asphalt track, for the Pan American Games there, and you know, midget automobile racing, small midget cars, 75-inch wheelbase cars, open wheel, open cockpit cars. They raced there back in 1935. So from about 1935 to 1968, there was some type of motorsports going on there at Soldier Field.
And then even a little bit west, you know, we think of, you know, Heinz Hospital and the Loyola Hospital complex. It's just a big thing that's out there. Maybe I think it's Maywood, right, is the town that it's in. And that used to be another kind of racing hotbed as well.
Yes, I mean, that's kind of a real hidden gem as far as racing history goes in the Chicago area. It was called Speedway Park, and it was a 2-mile high-banked wooden board track, and it operated from 1915 through 1918. And it was the owners and the people behind it, the backers of it, the management group, they were really trying to go neck and neck with the Indianapolis 500. And but can you imagine these cars, big open wheel cars, big high tires, nothing, you know, not much grip to the track, and splinters flying and the track kind of coming apart, and these cars are really rolling around there. And they raced there from 1915 through 1918. It just never quite caught on. And then I think the maintenance of the track, reading, doing some homework on this and research, you know, just the maintenance of the track to keep it going kind of brought it to a close. And, yes, it's right there by that Loyola Heinz Veterans Hospital complex right there. I think that's like 12th Street and 1st Avenue.
Wow. You think of all the ideas throughout history that end up on the cutting room floor. And as a guy in and around racing, you'll understand the importance of sponsors. I'm thinking Pine Sol would have been great for that, you know.
Keep your wooden floors clean. Use Pine Sol.
Right, like the driver would come out, this is what I use on my floor and the track. Well, think about this. You know, they say for dirt track racing, you know, it's not really racing if there's not dirt in your beers, and maybe there could have been a whole different thing, an alternative reality. Like, you're not racing unless you do have a lot of splinters.
Yeah, and I mean, they were reading some stories, some race results, and in the Chicago Tribune, I mean, the splinters are, you know, hitting the drivers and hitting them in the face, and it was just kind of high speed. I mean, you know, this is kind of the beginning of racing, really, you know, as we know it today.
Oh, okay. Well, there is a lot of racing going on in Chicagoland, not so much with the wooden floors, and maybe, you know, that is an improvement. But talk a little bit about some of these tracks that we got. I know that we've had last year on the show during the season, you know, we had some reads and some tickets to give away for Sycamore Speedway. There's some great racing happening. So you don't always have to wait until, you know, NASCAR comes to town once a year. You can enjoy racing all summer.
Yeah, there's quite a few tracks still in the area. You mentioned the Sycamore Speedway. That's out there west of St. Charles on Route 64 between St. Charles and the town of Sycamore. And there's the Grundy County Speedway. They race in Morris, Illinois. They race on Friday nights. It's a paved track. Kankakee County Speedway and LaSalle Speedway, dirt tracks out there in their respective areas. And just a lot of racing going on, you know, still on a weekly basis starting late April or 1st of May through and past through the Labor Day weekends.
Yeah, I want to let the listeners know, again, we're talking with acclaimed longtime racing historian, correspondent, writer. Some of the photos are great. Stan Kawasinski, he is on the line with us as well. So let's talk about, you know, as we think about some of those stars of racing, and some of them seem like they have very little in common, you know, with us here in the Midwest or Chicagoland and things like that. But it isn't necessarily that true. I remember, you know, maybe 15 years ago talking as they were putting in Chicagoland Speedway, talking with Richard Petty and bringing up Fred Lorenzen, and you could tell that this was a person, whether it was a, you know, a competitor or a nemesis, right, that was very important to him. Chicago has had right here in the Elmhurst area, actually, has got one of the biggest stars in all of NASCAR.
Yeah, Fred Lorenzen, who lived in Elmhurst, Illinois, kind of cut his teeth on the short tracks of Chicagoland. He raced at Soldier Field. He also raced at a track called O'Hare Stadium, which was right at Mannheim and Irving Park Road in the, I guess you'd say, the shadows of the O'Hare International Airport. And he ended up going down south, moving down south to become one of the top drivers. He was, a few years ago, was ranked one of the top 50 drivers in NASCAR history. He was the first NASCAR driver to win over $100,000 in one season, and that was 1963. And he ran kind of a limited schedule. He didn't run all the races, and he raced for a team based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, known as Holman Moody. And they were like the premier Ford factory team back in the day.
Yep. I mean, so you think about it, won the Daytona 500, did everything that you can do in a stock car at the time, and has been completely embraced as one of the greatest drivers in NASCAR history, is down there in the Hall of Fame as well. So Stan, as a guy who has been seeing it since 5 years old, all the way up until now, where you can do anything you want, go anywhere you want, when it comes to Chicagoland racing, you know, what are some of your favorites? What are the things you're going to be doing this summer?
Well, there's a lot of racing going on. They're going to be opening up at the LaSalle Speedway in Easter weekend, Friday, Saturday. They have their on the dirt there, their annual thaw brawl, and hopefully Mother Nature will cooperate that weekend. And I go out there to Grundy County Speedway in Morris, Illinois for the Friday night racing. I'm looking forward to Chicagoland, the NASCAR weekend out there. That's, you know, they've changed the dates around a little bit. It's going to be late June, and the 1st of July is the cup race there. So I don't know. I'm just looking for and I go all over. I kind of travel down south into central Illinois and into Indiana for some racing also. I am based in Indiana, I should say, and live here in Munster, Indiana. So I try to get around to all the tracks, and there's some great racing. If you want to drive an hour, 2 hours, you can see some great racing throughout the Midwest.
Yep, some of the best racing that I've seen has not necessarily been at those giant tracks for those giant events. There's so much great stuff to get out there. You never know what's going to resonate with you as far as the style. But racing is great wherever you go. And so, Stan, when you're talking about this, we talked about the Hall of Fame down there in Charlotte, North Carolina. What a great kind of legacy and history we have here in Illinois. And you're a big part of the Illinois Stock Car Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the Illinois Stock Car Hall of Fame, which was established in 2012, really with the big driving force behind it was Art Fireball Furman, and he was a former racer at Santa Fe Speedway out there in Willow Springs that closed up after the 95 season, I guess it was. But Art and myself and several others just thought that race drivers, stock car drivers in particular, in the state of Illinois need to be honored and recognized. So we've done that since 2013. Every year we've had an awards banquet, or I should say maybe an induction banquet, ceremonies banquet. And the fans kind of vote these drivers in, you know, and it's just a lot of great history there. And it's the home of the Hall of Fame is a historic auto attractions museum in Roscoe, Illinois. So it's going to be kind of neat meet and greet some of the greats of Illinois stock car racing.
For people who want to get out there and see some of those things, get involved, participate, support some of the events, how can they kind of keep track of and get involved with the Illinois Stock Car Museum?
Well, I think the best thing to do is just go on the internet there, and it's www.illinoisstockcarhalloffame.com is the website, and it's probably the best way to go, and gives you all the information, history, and for events in the past and in coming up.
And for you personally, Stan, as you travel around all over the place, I know we're going to have you here on WGN kind of keeping us up to speed with some of the local racing periodically, so we enjoy looking forward to that. But for people who want to keep up with you, any social media or places where people can see some of the photographs or some of the writing or keep up with some of the things you're doing?
Yeah, we're kind of not that skilled. Challenge, I guess, is the word and technically. And I have a website myself. It's www.chicagolandautoracing.com, and we've got just a ton of history on there, photographs, stories on drivers, the old tracks in the area, and we try to keep that history alive, I guess, or in the forefront.
Encourage people to keep up with you, and Stan Kawasinski, one of the very, very best in the business. Honor to have you on, and thanks for jumping on WGN today.
My pleasure, Dane. Really nice talking to you.
Hi, this is Stephanie Izard, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
I really do believe that something's got a hold on me here.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, and great food town. Great architecture town, great car town, great so many different things town. It also is a great place for the best culinary tour on this planet to be making its way towards Chicago coming up next Sunday on the 8th. There's going to be 5 chefs, 5 wineries, and 5 heritage breed pigs that are going to be battling for the Cochon 555 crown here in Chicago. And one of the participants, it's kind of a home game for him. He is the executive chef over at the Hilton Chicago. You know him. I think he's going to be representing Kitty O'Shea's this time, but he's been at some of their signature signature and flagship properties in Cancun and that great one out in San Francisco. It is the one and only Mario Garcia. Chef, welcome to WGN.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for having us. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being a great chef in the Chicagoland area and doing so much of what you're doing for Hilton. And thanks for participating in Cochon 555. We're excited about it. We've been, of course, listeners to the program know that we've been, you know, involved in a judge basically since it started. It is whenever you go around the country, when it comes to traveling, culinary events and tours, this is one of the big ones that you're involved in.
Totally agree. It has been one of those that I have followed throughout my career, and now I'm going to have the first opportunity to be one of the chefs participating in it. Very, very excited to be part of it, you know, working with a local farm, having the opportunity to get one of the heritage street pigs, and working with a mangalista. Very excited.
Yeah, you got the mangalista. Oh, that's going to be great. Now, here's the thing, too, and for the listeners, the entire thing, it's a great event, and people enjoy it, and it's got not only great chefs and great food, a lot of creativity in there, certainly wines, spirits. It's a fun event. It's amazing to attend it, but it is for a higher purpose to raise the awareness for heritage breed pork, and you're going to be doing that as well. So you've been around, you've heard of the event, you've been a fan of it. Now you get to participate, but it's a home game. Do you have an advantage, you think, being right at one of your home hotels?
I like to believe so, but, you know, I'm participating with some great chefs. They are great colleagues. I know all of them, and it's one of those things, you know, you just doing it, and it's so much fun. It's we focusing on the farms, we're focusing on the pigs, and, you know, thanks, Cochon. They just keep growing and growing, and it's a very exciting event for me.
Yeah, it is great, and we're going to be looking forward to it. We'll have some tickets for some listeners, I think, we'll give away a little bit later on in the week. So, Mario, you're one of the chefs. Also, Marianne Thomas-Grogan is going to be one of the chefs. Corey Morris, we know him for a long time. He's representing Baleo. Ryan Burns from the Blanchard, he's going to be one to watch for sure. Andres Padilla from Topo Labambo, one of Rick Bayless's signature and best places. And Carlos Gaitan from Chef Carlos Gaitan from Mexique. These are some top chefs. Now, it always is the kind of thing, you get the pig, you can do anything you want with it. There's a lot of creativity. Are you looking forward to doing that, kind of spreading your wings and doing something different?
I am. You know, in fact, I'm representing Kirishay's, is one of the restaurants in our hotel. And what I'm doing, it's I'm doing an Irish take, but bringing a lot of the influences from my own heritage. You know, born and raised in Mexico, understanding that I was a farmer. I grew up eating, obviously, a lot of pork. And I'm bringing some of those ingredients and combining with some of the local fare that I cook. And I think, you know, it's going to be fun for me to be able to express a lot of my ideas and with a lot of my heritage as well.
Now, you look at some of the flavors you're going to be bringing into it. I think that is going to be great. It said in the bio that you like to garden, you like, you know, vegetables and that kind of stuff as well. But for a corporate hotel structure, I want you to give a big high sign to Bob Allegrini, who I know. So tell him hello for sure next time that you run into him. But are you thinking maybe some of the things that you're going to be doing here as one of the top chefs for Hilton, that you can maybe talk some of the other Hilton restaurants around the country into incorporating some of the heritage breed pork?
We like to work with farmers. So around the country with all the Hilton properties, there is a lot of programs for us to use when it comes to local farming. In fact, you know, even though we are a large hotel chain, I have a bunch of farms that I work here locally in the city of Chicago. I work with Windy City Farms. I work with Neat Clark Farms out of Michigan. A lot of local what we call local from Wisconsin. I have a lot of influence from what the farm to table are. Obviously, being such a large hotel, it is very difficult for us to get everything from farms, but everything that we can utilize and influence and bring to the table, we'll do it. And that's why Cochon, you know, is an event that for me just makes sense that I'm able to participate, because it's something that I'm familiar to use working with farms, and it is having the opportunity to do something with great ingredients, such as pork, a heritage breed, it makes it even more exciting.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun having you involved. It's going to be great to have it. The event over there, Cochon555.com. That's Cochon, C-O-C-H-O-N, 555.com. You can get some tickets, get out there and enjoy it. It's some great events. And I can't tell you, so certainly some chef selections, dishes, all those kind of things. You're going to have at least five dishes along with what it is that you're making with the pig and those other chefs as well. And bourbons and tequilas and certainly a lot of wine as well. So, and all for a great cause. So encourage people to get out there. And good luck to you, Chef, and let the listeners know we've been talking with Chef Mario Garcia representing Kitty O'Shea. So we'll let you get back to work. Thanks for what you're doing. Good luck, and we'll see you on Sunday.
Thank you very much, and looking forward to see you around.
All right, thanks, Chef. That's Chef Mario Garcia. See, it's tough. You know, you got to do so many in the food community, in the chef community. You want to be local, sustainable. You want to get your stuff from whether it's Green City Market or some of the other great markets or farms in the area. But when you know, it's a big property in a big, giant city, it's not always easy to do. So great to hear Chef getting a chance to go ahead and do that. What we are going to do is take a break. We're going to come back, and we are going to talk with Robert Olson. He is from Claremont Collection, and I tell you, we talked about it before we started the show with Scott. This is I don't want to say it's a diamond in the rough, because it's a diamond and it is not rough at all, but it's one of those things I'm not sure a lot of Chicagoans, even car fans and enthusiasts, are aware that it exists. It's going to be unveiled and going to be showcased in a bunch of different ways coming up this summer and for the future, including an event he's going to talk about as well. So stay tuned for that. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN. 20 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. When it comes to great cars, we are getting towards that kind of season, kind of car season, cruise night season, car show season, where so many different suburbs are doing it every week, you know, oftentimes taking over entire downtown areas and kind of showcasing some of their favorite cars. People bring them out from all over the place. It is a thing that we are going to be doing pretty regularly here, especially with the White Sox taking up some of the day. Where we're going to get out there with some of the people out in, I know, Lombard and in Westmont and Wakanda and Roselle and a bunch of different places. But those cars, you know, they show up and then the smoke clears and then they go away. There's a place where there are it is an amazing, it would be the best car and cruise night that you ever saw, and it is in one place, and that's where it is, and you can visit it all the time here. And it's the kind of thing that you didn't necessarily know existed, at least not to this extent. It is Claremont Collections at 3117 Knox Avenue, and the guy who's got his hand on the pulse of so much of it and helping you be able to experience and enjoy it as well as with us, it's Robert Olson. Robert, welcome to WGN.
Thank you for having me here.
See, now this is the thing. For car people, you know, they know the best place to see cool cars, whether it's some of these different events that are happening around Chicagoland. But you guys have had basically the best car show in town all the time in one building. It's kind of a best kept secret that you got over there.
It is. I heard you say it earlier that it was a hidden treasure, and it is a diamond in the rough.
It's like 300 hidden treasures.
it really is. And I myself experienced that a couple years ago blindly when I walked in. And I think maybe...
So you didn't know either?
No. And I'm a Chicago guy.
Is part of the... Now, here's the thing. So and give a little bit of background on it. Is part of the reason is that, you know, it is a private... These are private collections of cars, and that you don't necessarily, just maybe for safety purposes or insurance, you don't want to necessarily promote they're there unless you're going to do something with them.
Well, how Claremont came about was it's actually the prized possession of Mr. Larry Claremont, and he's a World War II veteran. He's 91 years old, very active with the car museum itself, and you know, technically it's a car collection, and it's his collection. So all of the vehicles there, approximately 300 on display, about 350 now in the collection. He had as many as 600.
How does he know when you're to the point of you're collecting these priceless vehicles, and Robert's going to go into some of the amazing, this isn't just a collection of cars, this is a collection of one-off amazing kind of automotive masterpieces. Like, how do you decide which ones you want to get rid of?
Well, Larry has an eye for Rolls Royce. He likes Cadillacs also, but the collection itself, it goes for cars anywhere from the early 1900s all the way to 2008 Tesla. So there is something there for everyone. Sometimes when Larry sees things, he wants them, and
well, Larry sees, Larry apparently wants, and then he gets, right? Because it's there.
Does. And he's done a great job at putting this together in a approximately 100,000 square foot two-story building that I say is museum quality.
Oh, my gosh.
Legally, we're not a museum. We're a private collection.
Yeah.
But when you walk in, your jaw hurts because it drops.
It is the kind of thing. You mentioned the Cadillacs. There are some throughout the entire history of Cadillac, Rolls Royces, and these are premier cars. This isn't, you know, the Pacer collection or the all the Gremlins, you know, that you knew and enjoyed. And when you say 100,000 square feet, it is packed to the gills. I don't know if let's say someone said, Robert, like, hey, can you get that one out of the back? It would probably take all day to move them around to get them out.
Yeah, it's like playing Jenga and Frogger at the same time, you know. But it's funny, out of the hundreds of people that have, there are thousands, I should say, of people that have managed to pass through their car club people, charity groups, civic groups. Everyone is amazed by it, and I've never heard a naysayer there yet.
So Larry Claremont has decided to go ahead and collect these cars. You can have cars that you like, and he's got, obviously, said an affinity. There's a certain amount of, there's some Corvettes there too, right? Isn't there?
There are. There's a commemorative one. It's a 1953 rear end, okay. 2003 Corvette. It's pretty neat.
There's some Corvettes. There's a lot of Cadillacs. There's a lot of Rolls Royces. But there's also some kind of historical cars that don't fit into those categories that he must have seen and said, geez, there's only maybe one of these. I got to have it. Because there was a car that's, is it bedazzled? It's completely covered. And I mean every square millimeter in like diamels or something, right?
They're actually Swarovski crystals.
Oh, nice. Even better.
They're hand-placed. And, you know, the car is done in a red, white, and it has a blue in there. So it really stands out. It's it looks like a toy, except it's a full-size car covered in crystals.
And there's some cars, some of kind of iconic cars from your favorite, either movies or TV shows. What was the thought process? As Larry has, I'm sure he's explained to you on a number of occasions, like, here's what I was thinking when, because, and you brought it out, and your son Michael is here as well. You brought it out to the auto show. You had really what has to be one of the very few really authentic Batmobiles from the old series.
Yeah, this is it's a one of five. It is a replica, so it's a one of five replica, but it was built, you know, back in the 60s, and it truthfully has the perfect color saturation on the orange and
it was designed to look like exactly, and this is from the original series,
right.
What kind of car was it originally, or did it start out as really, hey, we're going to try to replicate that Batmobile?
It's actually a Lincoln.
Okay,
so yeah, it sits on a Lincoln chassis, and you know, everything else is custom.
It's pretty amazing. So you think about this, the guy loves Rolls Royces. He loves Cadillacs. There's certainly a lot of those there. But also, did I notice that there was like Vespas or something? Does Larry ever come in? I know he's probably got other cars. You said 600. Maybe he kept a couple at home to drive around if he needed to run some errands or something. Like, does he ever come in and like pull one of those out right away at a Vespa?
Larry has several cars that he keeps himself. He is there at the collection, so if you do come and visit, you will get to meet Larry from May through approximately October. And
does he keep certain hours if you wanted to go talk to him, or does he do kind of presentations? Because I know he's got sort of that little area in the back that kind of highlights, you know, him and his career and some of the things. And you mentioned too, it may not necessarily be a museum, but he's always trying to raise awareness for World War II veterans and things like that.
He is. We say that the cars are the stars, and truthfully they are. But when you go there, when you walk around, you see the vintage posters, the neon signs. You see a room dedicated to World War II mementos that Larry earned and his awards. You see other things such as Chicago namesakes such as Hot Dogs. We have some of their memorabilia there. So there is a theme going on there. There's a buildup of State Street with the Marshall Fields building, and we keep timepieces there and different clocks as collectibles. So they're, like I said, the cars are the stars, but truthfully, there's a heck of a lot more there.
You mentioned it, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that. It is not just a giant, whatever, 100,000 square foot warehouse. It is kind of almost, it's kind of like a theme, like a town, right? There's facades of buildings. You mentioned Hot Dogs. It is a great place to go ahead, not only to see the cars, and even though it is a private collection, it is kind of, I want to say, it's not a man cave. It's like a man warehouse. cars, right? Or for girls too. There's a lot of there's a lot of cars, and the girls love them too. Hey, that's like a Frank Thomas thing to say. Anyway, the but yeah, it is great. You talk about you're going to be expanding some of the things that you're doing. When we come back a little bit later on in the program, we're going to talk a little bit more in depth on cars and coffee and a specific event. Okay. But you say people have, you know, groups come in or clubs come in. Talk a little bit about how people can enjoy the collection and also kind of help out whatever it is that they're doing activity-wise.
So currently, we staff the place from Wednesday through Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. So you can just come to Claremont. We have free parking, which is
very nice and rare in the city. Yep.
Yes, yes. It's almost worth it in itself just to come.
Do you have people like, no, don't need to see the museum. Just enjoying the parking.
I just want to park, yeah. So you can come Wednesday through Saturday. If you are a car club and you have nothing to do in the wintertime because Chicago winters eat up cars, we're a great location to come visit, to have a luncheon. We don't prepare food in-house. We'd be happy to provide you with a preferred vendor.
Yeah.
Just on the way here, I was checking my emails, and one of the Corvette clubs locally was reaching out to us to do just that.
It is, because you do have an event space there. I mean, you could have it. I think you'd mentioned it when we got a chance to actually see it, that people do their weddings there or do certain parties there. I could see like a retirement party. I could see, you know, any kind of a car club kind of party too, because you do have the event space that is open and can be kind of customized and shaped to whatever the event needs. And this isn't even outside of where the cars are, right?
Right. We do, Larry being a veteran and myself being a Chicago police detective, we enjoy having charity events. And that's actually how I walked in the door, was volunteering for a children's charity.
So you just came in, and then, of course, you're Robert. You're like, I can't leave. It's one of those kind of things.
Yeah, they were going to call the police on me.
No, no. Like, I'll call myself.
No, but that's exactly how it happened. I'm Robert the car guy, right? So I do have a couple cars. I'm working on a 1960 Ford Falcon four-door, which is not designed
nice
to hardly too many people, but it's neat because it's a piece of history.
The Falcon is cool.
It is, you know. So I actually walked in with that in mind, and like I said, I know Chicago pretty well. And when I walked in, I was amazed that this existed, and I did not know about it.
See? And you're out there on the streets on a regular basis, a car enthusiast, not knowing that it existed. I found out about it from the things that you do at the auto show. And you look at the caliber of cars, it's almost a shame to keep them under wraps. So excited that you're going to be helping to share some of those things. And before we go to break, in that event space, you know, everything about the place is kind of unique and elevated. The bar, talk a little bit about the bar in the event space.
The bar is actually a 1957 Chris Craft boat that's cut right down the middle.
Yes.
So it really fits well. It stands out. It's a conversation piece, and it really lends itself well.
Excited that you guys could come in and fill us in on Claremont collections. A little bit later on in the program, we're going to talk specifically about the Cars and Coffee event coming up that Robert is running. Right now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll send it to the news. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Let's fly away.
This is John Planick, Director of Athletics at Lewis University, and you're On the Road with Dane at WGN.
Far in far Bombay, come fly with me. Let's fly away.
720 WGN, On the Road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And on the line with us, we've got a leader of all things athletics at some of Chicagoland's favorite institutions of higher learning, former DePaul Assistant Athletic Director, former Loyola University Athletic Director, and current acclaimed and award-winning director of all things athletic for Lewis University, the one and only Dr. John Planick. Welcome to WGN.
Thanks. It's great for being back on the show with you.
All right. Okay. Well, see, this is really great. You have the unique perspective, having been there with your hand on the pulse of so many of these programs and institutions, and you got to be excited. You know, the reason for the listeners out there, the way that Dr. John Planick and I know each other is our common associations and work with the one and only Joe Gentile, which is the namesake where the Ramblers play their basketball. And but it's got to be exciting. I mean, as someone who knew Joe very well, as you did, he would be loving this.
Yeah, I think I happened to exchange some emails with Carol Gentile, and said that Joe, he probably is up in heaven somewhere maneuvering balls and baskets in such a fashion to get the Loyola win, and then chomping on a cigar. And then I think he said that that would be a three-cigar night, and he's probably had a couple three-cigar nights up there. But Joe was a great supporter of Loyola University, as he was St. Ignatius, and as you know, a number of other a number of charitable organizations throughout the Chicagoland area, and he'd be delighted with the run that the Ramblers have been on. And if he was alive, he'd be in his crushed velour sweatsuit sitting at half court and berating the officials.
Oh my gosh, you know he would. And, you know, it would be in team colors, burgundy. Of course, he had one of those, had a number of those in team colors. You mentioned the three cigars, and that's kind of the way that they've been doing it. I mean, first and foremost, you're a director, obviously, but also a fan, and Loyola has been winning these games, and I don't know that they needed to be this close. It seems like they, you know, kind of live for the drama.
Yeah, it's you know, three last second shots moving on in the NCAA tournament certainly subscribes to the theory of March Madness.
When you think about this, and Joe, he would have absolutely been loving this, and you look at the just kind of the presence of a Sister Jean, right, as the team chaplain, she's out there. Joe would have been, and you know him, he would have been, you know, front and center. Obviously, the gym has his name on it. He would have been such a big part of them. I would have loved to have seen him kind of reveling in this moment and having, I think, all of America get to know Joe.
Yeah, he would have been 24/7. Not that he wasn't 24/7 already, but he'd been 24/7 touting the Ramblers and making sure that they got their fair shake of publicity. Now, Joe worked from sun up to sundown to make sure that Loyola got publicity, and he probably would have been off the last couple of weeks because there was so much publicity for the school on its own.
Oh, he absolutely never stopped. Now, you think about this. He was the guy, and I think this has been news to a lot of people, not only in Chicagoland, but around, you know, Illinois, maybe even the country, that the only Illinois program to ever win an NCAA championship was Loyola. He mentioned it, 63, the three cigars and all that kind of stuff. I always felt like, you know, growing up in kind of just the age group, the kids, is DePaul was kind of, you know, that was when they were sort of in their heyday, right? You know, they made it to the Final Four. They had great teams for a number of years afterwards, and they were sort of that top program in Illinois for a long time. And then you had Illinois had a little run maybe about 10 years ago. But has it changed, John? You know, as a guy who has been at both of those programs, identified with basketball success in Illinois, has Loyola supplanted DePaul?
Well, it's always, you know, what have you done for me lately? And the most current, you know, current success, obviously, when the White Sox were in 2005, that was the team, and the Cubs were like, oh, man, maybe the Sox have overtaken the Cubs, and the Cubs win the World Series. So it's always like, what's in the news most recently? They say that the news cycle is 24 hours now. It might be even a little bit less with all the social media, maybe a couple hours until you recycle through something new or current. So Loyola, certainly with this run to the Final Four, and, you know, I think more impressive than the run to the Final Four is they have 30-plus wins now. So you can say, you know, sometimes you could get to the Final Four with 25 or 26 wins, or you think that you have a signature season with 26 or 27 wins. But once you have 30-plus wins, you put yourself in another category. Another statistic that I thought that was kind of interesting as they were going over the teams there in the Final Four, each one of these teams, it's kind of ironic, each one of these teams not only are in the Final Four, but they won their conference championship. So Michigan won the Big Ten championship, Loyola won the Missouri Valley, Kansas won the Big 12, and Villanova won the Big East. So you're talking, sometimes, you know, like teams that go into the NCAA tournament, they lose in their conference tournament, they get a little bit of a second win, they kind of redevelop themselves. But these individual teams, somebody said they're in the Final Four because they're winning. They're winning teams. And so they won their conference championship. They won enough games in the NCAA tournament. So you've got some winners there now.
The scary part is you look at it, those other three teams, you know, very prominent programs and probably would have gotten there regardless of winning the conference championship.
That's true.
Loyola,
that is absolutely true.
Even with 30 wins, they had to win to get it. I don't know, even with all the fun and excitement we've had and obviously a great team, I don't think they would have made it in without that tournament championship.
I think that the people on the selection committee, the men's NCAA selection committee and the selection chair, they've been pretty much adamant saying that, you know, if the Missouri Valley Conference as it ranks right now, it would be was a one bid league. So if you didn't win it, you were going to be in trouble. And a very fine Illinois State team last year, I think, had 28 wins and didn't go. So I think you're absolutely right. The Blue Bloods and the Power 5 conferences where Villanova could have stubbed their toe in the tournament. Same thing with Kansas in their conference tournament. Same thing with Kansas, and the same thing with Michigan. But they all won, and the Loyola was right with them.
Yeah, and I think it's going to make maybe the scouters, you know, next year kind of keep their eyes open for the potential of those teams. So some of these, so the next Loyola maybe doesn't fall through the crack. You know, 55 years since they've gotten to the Final Four, you know, and they are now. But the one thing about this is that I feel is different than a lot of Cinderella teams and the ones we watched this year in the tournament. Loyola's actually really, really good. You know, they are great passers. The fact that you don't have one or two stars to kind of focus on, they're able to hit, you know, the three-point shots and the in shots, and they really play as a team. I mean, this is a really good team.
Yeah, a number of the pundits and people saying that as they watched the Ramblers play more, saying that, yeah, it's a cohesive unit. They play defense and they play offense very well. Coaches talk about being connected on defense. So, you know, if you're going to slide over and take that guy, I know my responsibilities. So they stay very well connected on defense. And they share the basketball and offense, like you said.
A guy that's tuned into the sports world and basketball yourself. The game is being played in the Final Four in San Antonio. What do you think is going to happen? Do you have a prediction for today's game?
I believe that it's going to be a very tight game, and I think that Michigan might have too much athletic ability for Loyola. And that's been said, you probably could say that for every game, but I think that they're finally going to be running into guys that have, you know, you'll be playing against potential NBA guys, and that gets to another level. But you know what somebody said the other day? Never bet against a nun.
Well, they do have, whether it's Joe or whether it's Sister Jean with her direct connection
with
the red hotline or the burgundy, the maroon hotline.
Yeah.
You know, they've got some extra powers working into it. And
yeah.
We mentioned in the intro, you know, award-winning athletic director. We want to let, of course, the listeners know we're talking with John Planick over there at Lewis University, the director of athletics, and the NACDA Under Armour Athletic Director of the Year, one of the few directors that have been recognized for that for the 2017 and 18 season. Every place you have gone, you have made the programs, not just basketball, obviously that's a focus today, but all across the board better. So let's talk a little bit about Lewis University. How are you liking it, and what should people know about Lewis?
Yeah, well, we're Lewis University. We're in Romeoville, so we're just south of Joliet, a little bit north of Bolingbrook. We're 6,500 students. We're a LaSallian Christian Brothers school, so that means our affiliation. We're affiliated with some Chicago Catholic high schools, with St. Joseph's, De La Salle, Montini being part of our Christian Brother family. So the Christian Brothers helped found the school. And we're a Division II program. We offer full scholarships.
Wow.
We have 20 sports, so we have more sports than DePaul and Loyola. We have over 400 student-athletes. And over the last few years, we've been on a pretty impressive run. Our women's basketball team 2 years ago was ranked number one in the country. Our women's volleyball team this past year was ranked number one in the country. And our men's volleyball team 2 years ago was ranked one in the country. We fortunately or unfortunately participated in the NCAA championship in volleyball against the Loyola Ramblers. And the Loyola Ramblers beat us in the championship game 3 years ago out in Stanford. So we've been on a pretty good run lately, and we're going to keep doing it.
Well, they are truly blessed to have you. I'm sure you'd say the same, that you're happy and excited about being able to do all the things that you're doing at Lewis. When you first showed up there, was it the kind of thing that they sit down and say, John, they're excited to have you. They want you to get down, get to work. Was there some things you were focusing on?
I think that they actually, from a perspective, a competitive perspective, their athletic programs are known at the Division II level on a national basis. So we had a lot of good things going for us. We've made some tweaks and a little bit of improvements, and have had some good success. But it's like anything else, you can put everything in line to be successful, but you need that little couple bounces, couple breaks here, a couple kids decide to come to your school. So we've had those, fortunately, and we've been able to enjoy some great success on the courts and in the classroom as well.
Well, people are enjoying watching Lewis and all the different sporting incarnations out there in Romeoville, and as they travel across the country, people are enjoying the prospects of a potential championship game for the Loyola Ramblers today. A guy who knows a lot about all of it is on the line with us, John Planick. So, John, before we let you go, give either the website where people can hear about Lewis University, get more information, maybe get out there, see you, maybe learn some things and play some sports.
Yeah, lewisflyers.com. So you can join us there. You can follow us on Twitter, and You can check out our website. Again, that's lewisflyers.com. And see all our athletic activities up on the board.
John Planick, Lewis University, thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for jumping on WGN today.
Dane, it's great being back on the air with you. What a treat for me it was.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Hey, this is Kevin Harvick, driver of the number 4 Jimmy John's Ford Fusion, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And our in-studio guest is Robert Olson from Claremont Collections. And, of course, we've got Michael. His son is with us as well. And you're like a radio TV media guy as well. As well as, you know, on the auto side, you played the part of the very famous Robin for the Batmobile at the auto show. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right.
Okay. Well, we got that. That's good, right? So you try to incorporate him into some of the things there? Because he makes a better Robin than either you or I, that's for sure.
He definitely fits in the suit better than me. So. Yeah. Claremont does have a lot of theme going on. So we do have the Batmobile there, and then we have the Batcycle. And in that area, we have a full-size, full-scale Batman and Robin, which is a mannequin. And coincidentally, Mikey fit in the outfit of
nice.
Robin. So
perfectly.
He put he put Robin's outfit on, and Robin ended up in the hot dogs booth with no pants on. But that's another story.
Well, it gets crazy at hot dogs, you know, since they shut it down. They're over at Wrigley as well. Now, when it comes to events that are coming up, you'd mentioned, you know, you've got the place, you can have your own event, you can certainly see it as a museum. People are going to definitely do that. But you have an event coming up called Cars and Coffee. Talk a little bit about the date for it. Talk about how people can get involved and what they're going to enjoy.
Sure. On April 28th, it's a Saturday, so from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., you can come and tour and visit Claremont. At the same time, we invited some of our car club members to actually bring their vehicles and display them in our private lot. So it's an interactive event. It's open to the public. It's going to be a great weekend. We're getting a jump because the Midwest Car Clubs do have events every weekend,
yep.
And we don't want to cheat one. So we decided to have ours early, and our head mechanic and lead detail guy, Julio Landa, helped put this together. So I want to thank him and Ana Mercado, and it's going to be a fun event. And we try to take the museum, or the collection, I should say, and try to incorporate what's going on around us. So we know in May we have Mother's Day coming up. And we had talked about that the fellas enjoy the collection profusely, but ironically, so do the ladies, because it really is a beautiful place. So we took our Eagle Room, which is our event space, and we have an Elvis impersonator coming out.
Well, you know, the ladies love Elvis. They always did. Even so, he's passed away, which you'd think would kind of put some people off. It doesn't. And so you're going to have an Elvis impersonator. And he was kind of just that whole era, right? You know, whether it's like the pink Cadillacs and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So kind of identified with cars.
He is. He identifies with cars, and a lot of his music videos actually have cars in them. So day before Mother's Day, it's a Saturday, so we're going to have one of our preferred vendors come in, and we're going to have a dinner event. So you can come see Elvis and come see a bunch of cars at Claremont.
Well, we'll definitely promote that as we get a little bit closer to that in May. And the event in April, the Cars and Coffee, talk about that. And what kind of coffee? And it's an early event, right?
So it is an early event. It's low-key. It's meant to be a meet and greet. So it's a good place to meet other car aficionados. I myself mentioned that Claremont in so many ways serves as a hub for other people that are just interested in the automotive industry.
So what is the time for the coffee and cars? It's 10 a.m. on that day?
10 a.m. till 4 p.m. 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. And we're going to have a food truck there, Philly Brothers. So they're going to have steak sandwiches. You can eat while you're there. And we're going to have a couple different coffee vendors. So.
Yeah, it's going to be nice. And the website where people can get all that information, see some pictures of the different cars, and get in touch with you and set some stuff up and get out there and enjoy it.
It's a really good website. It's Claremont Collections, Claremont with a K, Collections with a K. And you can also send an email to info@claremontcollections.com, and we'll get back to you within an hour.
It is a cannot miss, like I said, an untouched kind of under the radar jewel when it comes to cars. It is amazing stuff. So Robert, thanks so much. Michael, thanks so much for what you're doing, as Robin, for coming in and being on the show today.
Thanks again.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up and send it to, I think it's White Sox Weekly coming up right here. So it's a break on the road with Dane here on 720 WGN.